You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
On the phone, I have Barbara Santich, who is a professor at the University of Adelaide, culinary historian and author. Thanks for joining us, Barbara.
Thank you, Audrey. It actually sounds much better in French if I say Barbara Santich.
it does sound pretty good in French. There's many things we're going to talk about today, but let's start first with this book that was recently published, Wild Asparagus, Wild Strawberries, 2 years in France. I've been reading it for the last few weeks, but can you tell our listeners what it is about?
Well, in the mid to late 70s, my husband and I and our two twins, who were just a year, my husband had just finished his PhD, and I had travelled and studied in France a couple of years before, and he was here still working on his PhD, and he wanted to experience the France that I knew. And so we just said, oh, all right, then when you finish your PhD, we'll go off there. And so we did on a one-way ticket with no real plan except to find somewhere to live and somewhere to live cheaply and wait and see what happened. And so we ended up in a little village called Nizas in the Hérault, in the Languedoc, and that was where I started to learn so much more about French life, French traditions, and about the, well, really, it was like almost as though life hadn't changed in centuries and centuries and centuries. Sure, there were some cars, but, you know, by and large, the way the people lived was very much as it had been over centuries before, and this was a revelation to me.
And you talk about a lot of different aspects of life in France, which I think would be really interesting for people who are from France or not from France. There's a kind of common thread though in the whole book, which is food.
That's right, because I was interested in food. I'd become a food journalist in a way, which is what I wanted to do when I came back from France the first time. And so when I was in France, I wanted to continue that. And so our explorations of France were often through food, because there was so much that was new. For instance, in one of the chapters, I talk about butter. Now, butter's a simple thing, but in Australia, butter was just butter. There was only one sort of butter that you only ever got, and all the brands tasted pretty much the same. And then I get to France, and there's butter from different regions, and there's beurre doux, and there's beurre demi-sel, and all of them have a different flavour. So this is something to taste, to experiment with, and to decide which one of these different flavours is the one that you prefer most of the time. But sometimes you have the other one just for a change.
The book is quite detailed, the experience. You really feel like you're there, even though it happened quite some time ago. So were you thinking when you were there about writing that book, were you taking lots of notes? How did it come about?
Well, because we left Australia with the children and the grandparents were still here, I wanted to keep my parents up to date with at least what the children were doing and what we were doing, so that, you know, in a way it was a reassurance to them that we weren't starving and we weren't living on the edge of the road or something like that, like gypsies. So I wanted to give them all as much detail as possible. And so I had all those letters to go back to. But, of course, I've been going back to France, you know, almost every couple of years, almost every year in recent years. And it's a part of me now. And every time I go back, I see the differences. I see that the little villages that we used to know are no longer little villages. The core might be there, the core of the central core of the village might be there, but it's surrounded by lotissement, by independent houses with garages and perhaps with swimming pools. And the heart of the village has often died because the people who did live there have died, and their houses haven't been bought or lived in because they're an old style, and to turn them into a house with all the modern conveniences, which is what people want, costs money. So it's cheaper to build a new house in a lotissement on the outskirts of the village, and then if you're there and you've got a car, then you probably go to the bigger town, the bigger next town, to do your shopping. And so the commerces in the village die off. When we were at Nizas, there was a boulangerie. They didn't actually make the bread because of the story that I tell, because the baker's wife had run off with the doctor in the village next door. But it was a dépôt de pain, so that meant we got bread 6 days a week. But now there's not even that. There's no boulangerie. There's the little general store, the co-op, that's gone too. And the people who... There are still people living in the village, but there are probably more people living outside the village. So it was these changes, the contrast between the France that I was first introduced to and the France now, that made me want to write the book and to document what it was, how this France was, at the end of the 1970s, when, as I said, it was still touching hands with the 19th century. So that was the motivation, really.
And can you talk to me about some of your most memorable culinary experiences in France? Maybe some that are included in the book.
Well, one of them was the snails, and at that time people were foraged for foods. They foraged for wild herbs. They foraged for salad greens. They foraged for snails, and so wherever there are vineyards, there are snails. And so there were a lot of snails when we were living in Provence, if it rained. And we saw Madame, who owned the house we lived in, we saw Madame with some snails once. She'd collected them, and we said, "Oh, well, that's interesting. We'd sort of like to try this. Can you let us know next time you go out getting snails, and we'll come with you?" And she didn't ever let us know, perhaps because it didn't rain, I can't remember. But it did rain once, so we went out independently and got snails and came back and showed them to Madame, and she said, "Are these the ones? Are these all right?" And she threw out half of them, and I never understood why she threw them out, whether they were too small or not fat enough or whatever. But she threw half of them out, and then she put them, she showed us how to fast them and give them thyme leaves to give them flavour and also to get rid of any nasty things that might have been in their gut. And so we followed her instructions all the way through, and we ended up with this tiny little dish of, I think, about a dozen snails after a lot of work, and my husband at that stage wouldn't even look at them, but having gone through all of that processes of purging them and then cooking them, then taking out the insides, then making the garlic butter and putting them in the garlic butter and putting them in to cook for the final time, you know, I was honour bound to try to eat them, and I did eat them, and the garlic butter was lovely. But I concluded that it was an acquired taste, and snails themselves weren't terribly interesting. The garlic butter was, but not the other parts.
And one of the things that's interesting you mentioned right at the beginning of your book is that it's your trip to France, even before that, going to France inspired you to start writing about food.
That's right, yes. Not long before I'd left Australia, I read a book called The Food of France by an American journalist called Waverly Root. And it wasn't a recipe book, or it isn't a recipe book. I've still got it on my shelves, and it's still one of my favourite books. But in that, he goes through the regions of France and their foods and their wines. And I came to realise that recipes just don't come out of thin air. How and what people eat and cook is a product of not only land and climate, but also of migration, of wars, of economies, of politics. There are so many influences that that help shape how and what people eat that I hadn't really appreciated before. And having read that and then experiencing the different foods, the different specialties, as I travelled around France that first time, made me more and more interested in food, not necessarily in food history at that stage, although I suppose it was the beginning of an interest in food history, but making me want to understand, not just to say, oh, this is a nice cheese, I really enjoy this, but to understand why that cheese was made there in that way and for how long. Those were the questions that started to fascinate me.
And so that led in a career in food writing, food history, and also as an academic. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you're doing in that field?
Yeah, so what I'm doing now is looking at the food and the cooking and the meals of 18th century Provence. So in Provence, I'm looking essentially at the Vaucluse, the Bouches-du-Rhône, and a little bit of the Var, as far as Toulon and Hyères. There are reasons for just focusing on this particular region, and I can explain those if you want me to, but that's the region I'm looking at. And I'm looking at the accounts of travellers, people who visited, foreigners, who visited that part of France in the 18th century, and also household accounts, the occasional account of meals, account of produce that might have been available in the market, prices of goods, details of fishing practices, as much information as I can get, and trying to extract from all of that how people might have been eating and cooking at that time, because there's no Provençal cookbook for that period. The first cookbook that actually deals with Provençal food is comes from Nîmes, and it's called Le Cuisinier Durand, and that's 1830, and that was followed by one that was published in Avignon in 1835 called Le Cuisinier Méridional. And so they're the first ones to specifically give recipes for Provençal dishes. But what did people do before that? Were the dishes described in these books the ones that people were eating before? Some of them perhaps, but some of them not. And the other interesting thing is that there, in the 18th century, you start to get the new foods like tomatoes and capsicums, tea, coffee, chocolate, of course. At the same time, there's still a sort of medieval influence on food and cuisine. So it's this lovely meeting point of old and new in the 18th century that I find very interesting.
It is a very, very interesting field of study. For people who listen and they want to read your book, it's called Wild Asparagus, Wild Strawberries, 2 years in France. It's published at Wakefield Press, and you can find it pretty much anywhere, in bookstores, online. It's a very beautiful love letter to France, and it's a cuisine. Thank you so much, Barbara, for your time.
Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.